Hi, this is Key Marcello. I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock. Texas, you're listening to the Right to Rock Podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Yo, this is Key Marcello, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman show. Horns up!
Solo of all time, Mr. Key Marcello. Give it up. Key, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How you doing, Alan?
Oh, man, it is, I gotta tell you, it's an honor to talk to you, and I am not shy about this. I've said it for probably 20 plus years. You have the greatest solo, and you probably heard this a bunch, but the greatest solo of all time, just because of tone, melody, feeling, and ripping. And I know it's cliche because it's such a popular song, but your solo for Superstitious has every element as a list, for me as a listener, of the perfect guitar solo. Have you been I'm sure you've been told that, but I mean,
thanks a lot. Thanks. First of all, thanks a lot. Actually, you know what? I was really lucky in a couple of ways. I mean, in one sense, if you think about it, we just sold 10 million albums with The Final Countdown, and the first single from the new album was going to be the song Superstitious, and I got two complete solo choruses. It's just because I had this melody line which starts off the solo, and then I actually managed to convince the guys in the band that wouldn't it be awesome to have two runs. You know, we start with the first solo chorus, and then I just repeat it one octave up, and I get to shred a bit more, and they said, yeah, sounds like a good idea. And I felt like, got you! But that was a great chance to be able to display the whole idea I had for the solo. Actually, the best compliment I got regarding that solo, I got on the British tour, which I did in September. This guy came up to me and said, "The Superstitious solo, it's so great. It almost stopped grunge in its tracks."
That is a good compliment for sure.
Man. It is.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you think back. We interviewed Rhett Beach from Winger, and
yeah,
he had that solo at the end of Heading for a Heartbreak, and he said he used to get shit from like Richie Sambora and these other guys saying, you know, how did you get the guys to let you do that and have that extended solo? I beg for producers to let me do stuff like this. I mean, it's back in the 80s where it's more, you know, song-oriented, but then you have the rip-it solo thing. So, you know, that's a cool thing. You were able to convince your guys, hey, man, let me have one more run and extend this a bit. And, I mean, it defined you as, you know, a ripping, badass guitar player. I mean, especially coming in to fill in the shoes for John Norm after John Norm leaves, and then you pull this out, you're like, John, I mean, I don't want to, no disrespect to John, he's a great guitar player, but at that point, to me, it was like, John who? He's my guy. Man.
Awesome, man. I also have to mention the guys. I mean, everybody in the band are big Thin Lizzy fans, I mean, obviously. So everybody loves the guitar and guitar solos, so it wasn't that hard to convince them. I mean, once you have something good, they were on, so to speak. So yeah, I was really happy with that, with the way that solo panned out with everything, and you know, I'm still happy about it. Today it's really funny when I go to guitar sites and stuff like that with kids playing the guitar, and they say, oh, I love this solo, from what song is it?
Oh, really?
So now I guess the solo is bigger than the song, which is really upside down.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I just fast forward to, I mean, the song's a great song, but I fast forward to the solo. I just love that solo. And my co-host, you know, we had a show where we talked about our favorite solos, and he's a big Dream Theater John Petrucci fan. So he pulled out a Petrucci solo. I was like, I got my Key Marcello solo. It was like a battle of the solos was our show that we did. It was a lot
awesome.
Of fun. But yours is always at the top of my list. I mean, I love George Lynch. There's a lot of guitar players I love. But your solo for Superstitious just had, for me as a fan and a listener, every element I love in a solo. Feeling, the tone, and then the ripping. It's just amazing, man. Amazing.
Thanks a lot.
Well,
yeah, one thing that was really defining for my playing, actually, I got to mention this, is I used to live in the Bahamas, in Nassau, and I always went down to the store to get my copy of Guitar Player magazine when it came, and I read an interview with Pat Martino. Do you know this jazz guitar player?
Mm-hmm.
From New York, and I guess he's from New York. And in the interview with Pat Martino, he's mentioning when he's taking a walk, you know, on Manhattan somewhere, and he bumps into Mr. Les Paul. And he loves Mr. Les Paul, so he confronts him and said, "Hi, I'm Pat Martino. I'm your biggest fan. So great to meet you." And Les Paul goes, I mean, this Pat Martino is an amazing technician and a fantastic jazz player. I love him. He's awesome. And Mr. Les Paul, he says, "Pat, you sure play a lot of notes, and you're awesome. But does your mother recognize you on the radio?" And that's just an awesome question, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And with this in... with this, you know, this sort of frame of mind, I went into the studio, and because the thing is, if you start on 100 from the first bar, who's going to remember that? Because you can't really remember super fast runs. You got to establish something with a nice and good melodies. It's no different than songwriting, actually. You got to have something that is recognizable, that gets to you, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I feel bad here. I've taken up a lot of time here talking about my favorite solo.
It's all right.
But we're here to talk about your brand new record, Scaling Up. Before we dive into that, let's just chat about Judas Kiss real quick. And, you know, Judas Kiss came out in 2013. So 3 years later, you're out with your new record. What would you say for fans that had Judas Kiss? They're about to buy Scaling Up. How would you say the two differ?
I would guess, I mean, I'm very happy with Judas Kiss as well. The difference is that as Judas Kiss was flirting with metal, in a sense, you know, although I tried to please the melodic rock side of me as well, because I really love songs. I love songwriting, and I wrote songs for you know, like Percy Sledge, the soul guy, and all sorts of what are they called? The Moffats from Canada. I wrote all different kind of songs for people, but the difference between Judas Kiss and Scaling Up is possibly is I tried to get in touch with what is instinctive Key Marcello. What does come out when I don't think at all? I just let my hands go and I write. What are the riffs that comes up? Because think about it, I grew up in the 70s, became really successful in the 80s, and now I'm doing an album in 2016. I was curious to know what happens if I don't think at all. I just let it get out. And that's pretty much what you hear on this album. I mean, what comes out when I don't think. And I wanted to be a, I mean, what you get on the album is meat and potato. It's really, you know, it's not over tweaked or anything. And it's even recorded the old fashioned way in a big studio. And you get the drums in there the first day, you create a humongous guitar, drum sound. And you do the same with the guitar amplifiers and the bass amps, and then you start recording like in the good old days. And that's the way I wanted to treat this new album with these songs, you know, to do like a proper old album and with no samples or hocus pocus going on. Just what you hear is what you get.
Nice. Well, do you think that's a growing trend? Because that's always something that I find kind of interesting when new records come out in the digital age we live in. Is, you know, a lot of guys will do file share, and then other guys will actually get back in the studio and actually record a record like the old days. The last several guys I've talked to said, you know, we did some of the file sharing stuff because everybody lives in a different country and so forth. But now I think there's more of a trend to go back to getting more of that raw energy that you only get in the studio where everybody's in the same room creating.
Definitely. But one thing I can't stand is involving the computers too much. I mean, a lot of, like, there's so many examples, I don't know where to start. Everybody uses drum samples, which means that you have like an existing drum sound and you put on some new sounds on top of it to make it fatter, which is also really, you know, the lazy way out, because you don't really have to tweak the drums when you start recording them as much, because you know you can say them in the mix, fix it in the mix. And I don't like that at all. I like to hear, I mean, when I'm in the studio, I want to hear in those big Westlake speakers, I want to hear the drum sound we record. It's going to sound pretty much the same when we start recording it until when we mix it. I want it big from day one. I want to think big during the whole production. It's going to be loud and a lot.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I like it, man. And actually, it's got a raw energy about it because, like I said, everybody in the same room recording, and it's got a nice flow, and I really like the flow of the record. The first single, Black Hole Star, what a solid song that is. And I like how you started the record with that. I don't know if you remember back in the day, but it seemed like back in the days, a lot of bands would put the first song as a first single. And I hadn't seen that in a while. So I don't know if there was any method to your madness, or you just said, okay, this is the one I want to go with first. But could you tell me how that song came together for you?
Probably never a method in my madness. But anyway, what happened was I always thought that there was something special with that song. But you never know until you have it mixed. I mean, you never know how the entire song is going to come out until you have it and you listen to the whole record. But it was very obvious when I was sitting there with all the mixed tracks that it's a great opener. It has like sort of a built-in album opener intro with the gong and whatnot. I mean, it sounds like if you're looking for a track that's going to open up a good album, that's the one.
So it
was a no-brainer. Yeah, I'm really proud of the song too, because and the video, we got this kind of Blade Runner, if you remember that old science fiction movie. We got that sort of vibe in the video, which I think that vibe is also in the song, so it looks like it feels, which I always think is a plus.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. Well, something I meant to ask you. You know, you're on Frontiers, and I know with Frontiers, a lot of the bands that they sign, they say, okay, we want you to give us an album like you would have done when you were in Europe or, you know, or back in the 80s or whatever. Did they come to you with that notion? It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you said, I just put my guitar on and I just started writing and what came out. And it's got a good hard rock and feel, this record. It does. But did they just kind of say, okay, Key, we want a record. Can you just give us what you can do? Or did they give any idea of like, hey, could you kind of do this?
Oh, no, they were very respectful when they approached me. And we actually worked together on another album, one of my solo albums. It's Melon Demon Divine, back from 2004.
You know, I have that. I do.
Oh, really?
I forgot awesome. That was on Frontiers. That's a great record.
Yeah. And Frontiers back then wasn't the big now they're really a big label. Back then, they weren't. They were pretty new. And I signed to them without really know what I was doing, but they did a great job for, you know, where we were at. And that's actually a very different sort of thing that they're doing today. But when we started the talks, because I mean, we've been talking back and forth about doing something for quite a while now, and when I started talking to Mario and Serafino about what to do, and I presented the demos I had, and I had Scaling Up, Black Hole Star on the radio. I had pretty much a start of the album, and they just loved it. And then when I spoke to Mario, he suggested, why don't you record two of the demos, nowadays called LeBaron Boys, which is actually a name Europe took when we were trying to, you know, try out some new materials on the fans. So we did a secret gig at the Whiskey on the Sunset Strip, and we put, you know, Le Baron Boys out on, you know, on the door, because we couldn't put Europe there. This was back in the time, so we would sell out Irvine Meadows two days in a row. So we just put it out there and did one for the fans, and it was amazing. But what happened was later, when the record company listened back to all the tracks we did, they thought it was way too heavy. I mean, we were thinking in terms of, there's something new happening here. This is right before grunge and Guns N' Roses and the, you know, some somewhat more heavy bands are starting to happen. And so we wanted to do something more riff-based and heavier, you know? And they disqualified it. And, you know, like all the major labels, they're looking at stats, and they figure out, what's the biggest hit you had in America? Yeah, it's Carrie, which is a ballad. So they informed us that they were not going to release the album if it didn't have more ballads. All these rock tracks called the Le Baron Boys, it's actually outtakes. And we only did demos of those. So I picked two of the best ones, the ones that are mostly me, I would guess, that are my riffs that we started working on. And I re-record them for this album. And those are Wild Child and Don't Know How to Love No More. And I think they really completed the whole thing. Because back then, that was also instinctive key. That was the riff I would play if I didn't think. Because already back then, I was thinking I'm onto something here. You know, not to try to write a hit song, just to try to write something that's really second nature to me. And that's what I tried to do to the whole album.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very long answer. Did I even answer your question?
No. It was interesting, because I was going to ask you about these kind of lost Europe tracks, and it's really cool to get the backstory on those.
Yeah. What happened, I just got to mention that, we all... We spoke to Bo Hill, who informed us that they're not gonna release the album the way it is right now. And we wanted to tell them to get lost, you know, but they really had us by the coyone, because we already booked the world tour. I mean, we would have lost in the range of $10-20 million if we would have not released the album the way they wanted it. So we had no choice but to go along with them. And, you know, I mean, it's not like we had to redo the whole album. We had to add a couple of tracks that I'm not super happy with, to put it that way. But that's life, I guess. It's politics.
Yeah, totally politics. And I know back in the day, from a lot of guys we've spoken with, that's what ruined a lot of bands' careers was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's this pressure by the record company. It's like, no, we need a hit. We need this. You got to look like this. You got to write something like this. Like I said, there's several bands we've talked to that, had the record companies not gotten involved, they may have had more of a successful career.
Yeah, I know.
Let me ask you this. With Prisoners in Paradise, which was a good record, I thought Out of This World was stronger, just to be honest. Do you think if they would have left it with maybe a heavier edge, you guys wouldn't have got me kind of pinpointed for, I mean, just like Extreme, they got pinpointed with More Than Words, you guys got pinpointed with Carrie, but, you know, the Final Countdown still played. But do you think that had they not been involved and the album done a little bit more, do you think your run would have lasted a little bit longer? I know grunge was rearing its ugly head at that point too, but I wonder if you guys would have, I know the band's, you know, kept going, but
yeah. The thing is, we would have made it much better if we would have been able to record those rockers on the album, and that's no doubt about it. I think so. One thing that's really easy or really important to mention, though, is that the label, they really wanted us. The label, Epic, they wanted us to do another album, but in the midst of grunge, we didn't feel like we had a place, really. So we decided to take a break. That's how it happened. But I mean, I think if we would have been able to do the rockers on Prisoners in Paradise, we would have been able to confront the grunge thing. Because if you think about it, the grunge thing was over in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
After about 1.5 years, nobody wanted to be called grunge anymore because it was gone.
Oh, yeah. 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 It really was. It kind of makes me laugh because you think about the hard rock of the 80s and metal bands of the 80s. Everybody's researched, but you don't really see – I mean, Pearl Jam's been able to hang on and Soundgarden's back and forth and Alice in Chains. But other than that, you really don't hear of too many grunge bands doing much of anything anymore.
No.
So, which I do relish in a bit. Because my favorite music was Killed, and I have I have a distaste for grunge, but
it is.
But you know, I know we got to run here. I could talk to you all day, but
me too.
I want to ask you about one more song, and we'll wrap up. Another one I'm really digging is "Don't Miss You Much."
Awesome.
Can you tell me, you know, how that song came together? It's got a really good melody, very melodic. I'm really digging that track.
Came up with that "Don't Miss You Much," which is kind of reverse psychology or whatever, you know, where you try to convince yourself that you don't miss her, but you do, which gave the whole feel to the whole song, really. I mean, and I came up with that chorus on tour. I remember I was sitting just thinking about nothing, and it just came. And I recorded on my iPhone, you know, the voice recorder thing. And pretty much when I came home and recorded the chorus, the rest of the song just came. This is really one of those songs that writes itself. I just had to kick back and let it come. It's amazing, but sometimes it's just like that.
Yeah, sometimes those are the best songs, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a favorite track on the record?
I have many, you know. I mean, I had a lot of songs to choose from before we finally set on these 12. But the really special song for me is "Finger on the Trigger."
Thank you. Nice.
Because I mean the base of that song I wrote in the Bahamas. You know, I told you I was living there in the 80s. And it was actually meant for Out of This World. And then I rewrote it. I was never happy with the bridge. I rewrote the bridge and the lyrics. And now I think it's one of the standout tracks on the album.
Nice. It is a solid track, that's for sure, man.
Well, thanks, mate.
Key, I promise, last question, then we'll wrap up here. As far
sure.
as going forward, are you going to be able to tour, or what are your plans?
Oh, absolutely. I'm out right now. I'm doing a really big arena tour, actually. It's called Rock of 80s. And we're all over Sweden. We're doing the Globe in Stockholm, which is a 12,000-seater, sold out. You know, it's been sold out in every town we've gotten to so far.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so after that, I think I have one day off so I can wash my clothes, and then we're going with Kim Marcello Band to embark on the Scandinavian tour, which is the first leg of the EU tour, which is going to turn into the world tour. So we start in Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, then out into GAS, which is Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and then the Benelux, you know, the French, France, Belgium, and all those. And then we're going to take it from there. I mean, we have offers from both America, South America, and Asia. We definitely want to come to America.
That'd be awesome.
For sure. Yeah.
You have to play Texas, man.
Oh, for sure. I have friends in loads of friends in Houston, actually.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, Keith, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Yeah, come and see the show when I come to America. I really enjoyed touring America with Europe back in the 80s and 90s, but come back. This time is so much better.
Nice.
Awesome.
Well, Key, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therightrock.com, and we want to tell all the fans to grab Key's brand new record, Scaling Up, out now on Frontiers Records. Key, I can't thank you enough for your time today, man. It's awesome. This could
awesome,
be on
man.
For another 2 hours easy.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Well,
thanks a lot. Good question, man. Good
all
questions.
Right, well, you bet,
that's
man.
What makes it.
Hopefully we can hook up again, man. There's so much more to cover, but I know you're on a schedule here. So you take care, and thanks for your patience today, Key. I really appreciate it.
Keep on walking that road, and I'll follow. Keep on calling my name, I'll be there. And if a mirror's your brain, it's easy to take. I'm not superstitious. No. Ooh. I'm not superstitious. I have no doubt that there's a reason how things turn out. While things are changing from day to day, well, I keep this feeling.
This has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph.
have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.